Hi, it's Diane. It is Tuesday, August 27th. I'm here with the Noon Group. So far, we have Jennifer and Anne and Teresa and Maria and Rosie. Who wants to start us with check-ins and celebrations?
I will while my phone is still alive.
Go, Rosie.
Okay, so lots of celebrations. We were just in Costa Rica, and I would say, do you know what? We had the first, like what I would say, normal family little moments. And I can't tell you that we haven't had them for so long. It was so amazing. So we were coming back in the car from Vancouver, and we're listening to my husband's music, and it's awful. And I said, I want to listen to someone else's music. And so my daughter put her music on our car speaker, and we had this fantastic kind of banter for about half an hour around, you know, what's that guy saying in that rap song, and what does that mean, and why do you like this band, and we had this amazing moment.
Oh, wow, that sounds fabulous. This is kind of a normal sort of family conversation about normal
stuff.
Yeah, it was
just normal.
So cool.
And it made me realize how abnormal everything's been, right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
but it was good. It was good.
Awesome. Who else?
This is Anne. I can go.
Thank you, Anne.
Yeah, I guess our success, we've just started school. And after the second day of school, my son, you know, normally would come home and just, you know, get in the car and have that explosion from the anxiety or frustration. But this year he got in the car and he said, Mom, I really think I need to change out of my math class. And he gave me a couple reasons why, and they were very legitimate reasons. And I said, okay, I support that decision. Let's work on it tomorrow. And it was just like that first, like, waiting for the explosion, and it didn't happen. It was so calm, and it was wonderful.
Awesome. Great. Who else?
Hey, Diane.
Jennifer.
I need an email and a password to log into the teleseminar.
That's so strange. I don't know what to tell you. I'm so sorry.
All right, not to worry.
Okay. Who else?
Okay, this is Jennifer. I'll go. Celebration, my son, even though he was supposed to be working this summer and it fell through, he did start a job last week that he likes, and he's getting a lot of hours and working a lot of double shifts, so that's good. And I guess college started for him yesterday. So that's been a big change.
Yeah, how is that?
Well, he went down from 14 credits. Now he's sitting at eight units, just because a lot of my husband, too, thinking, you know, that we don't want to overwhelm him. He has to take a math class, which has always been his hardest class. So he's taking a math class with a fun class that he wanted to take, American government. He also signed up and held out to take world religions, but we would have let him if it didn't leave a 6-hour gap between math and that class, which made no sense to hang out on campus that long.
Jen, it sounds like when you said that, you kind of, I could almost see you shrugging your shoulders. Are you feeling disappointed that he's not doing more? Are you feeling okay about the decision? Where are you?
I think I am. Sorry, I don't know what's going on with me lately. I am disappointed that he's not trying more. Yeah. But realistically, I don't want to have him set up for failure and having too much and not being able to be successful in the classes he has.
Yeah, so you're kind of have mixed emotions because you can see how this is really the best, a better way to set him up for success, and there's still some disappointment, naturally.
Right.
That makes sense.
So.
Cool. Well, I'm hopeful that today's conversation will help you get a reframe, and we'll make sure you're feeling as solid as you can.
Okay.
Cool. Who else?
So this is Teresa, and I've been working on connecting with my daughter and trying not to nag her about phone use and studying for the upcoming ACT. And I even told my husband that so he could help hold me accountable. And even though I was doing pretty well, of course, late one night, and I always know it's the dumbest time to bring anything up. I got triggered because I saw her on her phone again. And so it kind of turned into, you know, a little argument and why can't you leave me alone and blah, blah, blah. And my husband came in as a beautiful mediator and reminded me about my commitment. And we were able to kind of make light of the whole thing. And so it's kind of like almost like a joke now. Teresa, I told you you could not talk to her. You told me that you aren't going to talk to her about that. You've got to keep your promise, blah, blah, blah. I was able to apologize to Jacqueline and just kind of let it go. So we kind of made light of it. And then my husband later, he's amazing. He was able to tell me because I was feeling badly that I had, you know, fallen away from my commitment. And he said, cut yourself some slack. You're trying. You're human. And so I was able to kind of pick myself up and say, yeah, you're right. And I'm just going to do better from now on. So that's my success.
I love that you're giving yourself some grace. And I love that you're keeping at it and knowing that it's, you know, letting go is one of the hardest things in the world. And you're trying to do it in a way that really firmly gives her and empowers her to be more independent rather than just kind of saying, fine, you do it, right? And that's that's even more of a challenge because you're watching your language and you're watching your engagement and all those different pieces. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Who else?
Maria,
are you last? Yeah, Maria's last.
I always go last. It's kind of like my thing. So I want to celebrate. We've been in school now for almost 3 weeks, and we've been making it to school very early every day, not by the skin of our teeth or anything like that, which is huge for us. And we did very well last year, but I just feel like we're both on the same page getting out the door. There's a little bit more collaboration. We've discussed how she's going to take care of, little chores that she has to get done. One of her things is, you know, when the dishwasher's ready to be when it's done washing, she puts everything away. So we had a discussion, you know, about how she would get that done either at night or in the morning. And so she's been doing pretty good. She's needed a little bit of help, and we've collaborated, and it's gone pretty well. So I'm very happy about that. I think she understands her value and, you know, how much it helps just to, you know, pitch in and just be part of the family and everybody helping out. So what else? And we also – go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to show directions. Go ahead.
Okay. So she had this morning, she had a little bit of a meltdown. I brought up her – I've been also kind of giving her, you know, just leeway to have her room, you know, however she wants it to be, which is a disaster. And I've just been bringing the clothes up
that she's washed and I've dried and folded or whatever, and said, okay, here you go. It's all, you know, you can take care of it the way you want to. And so this morning she couldn't find a pair of shorts she needed to wear under her uniform. And she had a little bit of a meltdown. And we both had a little bit of a altercation. But the good thing was is that we were able to find her shorts. We were able to regroup. And, you know, I apologized. I told her why I got triggered. And I explained it to her. And she explained it to me. And we had a nice breakfast and left the house. And it was good. So,
awesome.
Yeah, and just how we're human. You know, I said, look, when I don't have but 5 hours of sleep, I'm going to be tired, you know. And so it all worked out.
So I'm curious, Maria, how able were you to not say I told you so with regard to the shorts?
What do you mean not say I told you so? Oh, that they were in the basket?
No. You didn't jump to. Well, if your room was clean, you wouldn't have any problem finding your shorts.
Well, Diane, to be completely honest, I probably failed in that. You know, it was 6 o'clock in the morning. I was exhausted. I just did not. You know, she was yelling, and I got triggered, and I said, well. And I actually straightened a little bit of her drawer trying to find it for her because she says, you didn't bring them up. And I said, you washed them. I dried them, brought them up to you. They're in here. And they were in there, but she barely had any light on because she's very light sensitive in the morning. And so she didn't see them. I didn't even see them. And I said, honey, I didn't even see your bike shorts. I said, we needed more light in the room. And I said, so we both had a blooper. It's fine, you know. But she's not the jovial little toddler that she used to be when she was a toddler.
Especially
you know,
six in the morning,
wake up
yeah.
and yeah, just be full of joy and happiness and everything. That's just not where we're at anymore, and I accept that. So, I didn't do as bad as I may have at another point in our life, but I could have done better to answer your question fully, Diane.
There you go. Well, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, and I think that the reason I'm asking is because I wanted to kind of highlight that part of this is about when you screw up, you make amends, right? It's this sort of that's the baby step. And I would tell you that personally and for my clients as well, it's like this sort of, you know, you want to teach your kids that you don't want to teach your kids that you never make mistakes. You want to teach your kids that sometimes you make mistakes and sometimes you get triggered. And it's about figuring out how to handle them as gracefully as you can and to make up for it when you don't handle it gracefully. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yesterday
cool.
morning, she was upset with me and she came downstairs and apologized and gave me a kiss and said, I'm sorry, Mom. And I said, I forgive you. And we just went on. I mean, I just didn't skip a beat or anything, and you know, just like no further discussion was needed. So I agree.
Awesome. Where are you going to take aim this week, Maria?
Just having her stay. She's really great at staying on task with her homework. It's just, you know, getting to bed earlier, trying not to be up so late. Just,
okay.
I feel like I tell her, honey, if we all get more sleep, then, you know, you won't be triggered, I won't be triggered. And she's like, go to bed, Mom. And I said, if I don't stay up with you, you'll be up till 2 o'clock in the morning. And I said, and she's like, no, I won't, you know, but she'll be up later than she needs to be. So I just try to be up and check in with her and say, hey, you know, how much longer are you going to be? Are you, you know, getting everything
done?
Hang
on
a
second.
A lot of times I come in and she's dancing in the mirror and it's midnight.
So hang on a second. Maria, I'm going to challenge you to take aim on you getting more sleep and not on getting her to bed earlier. Does that resonate?
Okay.
Because the reality is one solution is let her stay up and let her go to bed on her own. And you certainly have the ability to do that. And you can make a deal with her about, you know, what do you want to try? You know, it's so you want to get in experimentation mode, not be in a position where you're pushing a particular solution. Does that resonate?
It does. Can I do that after her first algebra test tomorrow, though?
Because tonight you want to make her go to bed early. No, that makes perfect sense. No, there are moments that we go back to level one parenting, right? This sort of, I'm cutting the string, and you have the right to do that. And it will, you know, we always know that level one parenting has an impact on our relationship with our older kid. We just have to be willing to take that risk. Is that fair?
It is. And I will say I would probably be fine with just letting her go to bed, but her tutor that she's presently seeing is out sick and couldn't see her today, couldn't see her yesterday. And then her the new tutor that's going to be coming on board, her husband had to have like a heart catheterization just out of the blue today. So the backup for math is my husband. And, you know, last night they did okay, but there was still, you know, like the raised voices, you know, he got impatient with her. And I'm like, just calm down, you know. So.
So here's my morphed taking aim, Maria.
Sure.
You're gonna take aim on you getting to bed earlier and partner with her to come up with several ideas that might work that would also help make sure that she gets enough sleep. Does that resonate?
And partner with her on ideas to get more sleep.
To make that happen. Yeah. Because you really want her help to solve this problem, because you've got this, you know, you've got this piece of it that you're staying up because of her, not because of you. You know, so it's there's more than one solution here, not just she has to go to bed earlier so you can, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Who else? Jennifer, where are you taking aim?
I think just taking aim, like the other callers, he needs to get to bed much earlier than he's been going to bed. Just because when he works, he's not, you know, so he's not as tired or as frazzled.
So hang on a second, Jennifer, and I have had lots of conversations with Maria about this topic, so I pushed her a certain direction. So I'm curious, where is his point of buy-in? Is his buy-in for getting up well? Is his buy-in making it to work on time? Is his buy-in really to go to bed early? Where is his buy-in?
Well, we don't have it.
Okay. So going to bed early feels like a solution for another problem. Is that fair?
Yeah, but it's not really a problem.
So why is it important for you that he goes to bed early?
Because I know if he does, he'd feel better and... Because, you know...
So whose agenda is that, yours or his?
So it's probably mine.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like if he came to you and said, Mom, I'm feeling like crap. Mom, I was so scared. I was almost late for work yesterday. You know, if there's a problem that he sees that going to bed early might help solve, you have a whole different conversation than you observing that there's a problem and trying to put a solution on it. Does that resonate?
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, it wasn't until my son almost lost his job from being late that he decided that focusing on making sure he was up in the morning was the priority and going to bed at night was not the solution. Does that resonate? That's the distinction, right? So he had to decide.
Right.
It was about getting up and getting to work on time. You can stop at Starbucks and get a super duper high-powered caffeinated something. gives them enough energy to be at work.
Right.
So I guess the question is there an area where he's wants to see some change that you could focus in on that might be closely related to this?
Not that I can see. I guess it would be he can go to bed earlier so he'd wake up and feel better to make the mile and a half walk instead of having to pay for Lyft.
Well, and so that might be the place to start, is you might take aim on getting his buy-in to make the morning routine easier or less expensive or whatever else. Does that resonate?
Yeah.
Because it may be that he wants to solve the Lyft problem, or he may be that he likes, he's willing to, take that out of his paycheck right now, or it may be that, so it's about finding, again, it's that sort of where is his point of motivation? Which problem is he interested in solving?
Okay. Yeah, I think we just need to make it more clear that, you're going to be paying for Lyft if you don't walk.
So hang on a second. I want to keep you on getting buy-in, right? So your solution is I'm going to motivate him to get it better by making him charge for Lyft. I want to keep you the step before that if I can. Jen, is that
okay? Yeah.
Which is you're trying to figure out how to involve him in the process of solving the problem that the mornings are not going the way that you think that they could. Does that make sense?
Right. Right.
Okay. Cool. Anne, what about you?
Well, I would say we have the same sleep. I think we all have related sleep issues. But I think we've got a plan going forward that I've got to use for a couple weeks. And I have buy-in, and it's worked for the last week. So I think where I want to take aim is really something a little bit bigger, and I don't know how to break it down. So one of the goals for my son this year is the self-advocacy. He's seventh grade. He doesn't want to talk to his teachers if he doesn't have to. He doesn't want to take that responsibility for making sure he has homework. He just wants everything to be handed to him, make it easy. So I can see self-advocacy is going to be, he'll do it with me. Mom, I had a problem with that math teacher. Can I do something to change that? That's great. But he doesn't want to go to the teacher. So I'm trying to get.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
let me
do.
There's different pieces of that, right? So there's self-advocacy in terms of clarifying and asking questions around assignments. There's self-advocacy in terms of when he has a problem with a teacher. There's self-advocacy when it comes to, just kind of engaging and creating a relationship with a teacher. What part of the problem might he be interested in solving?
I think he would want the kind of relationship where he could go to the teacher to say, I need more help with this. I don't understand this. Can I do 10 problems instead of 15 problems. It's that.
So more independent in asking for accommodations and help, right?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. And the language I'm going to use is more independent, because the goal is to help him to become more independent and not get him to be like completely independent. It's not about being independent, it's about becoming independent. Does that distinction make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Teresa, where are you taking aim?
So I think I'd like to take aim on
encouraging her to manage her own phone so that it supports her goals and doesn't hinder them. And I think I do have buy-in in that she, you know, she's sitting here at the beginning of senior year with a very, very good GPA, and so she wants to be able to continue that. And also, she's got a, you know, ACT coming up, and even though I think she's way late in getting ready for this next one, she feels like she's got it. And so just since the phone is the thing that always triggers me, I want to take aim on encouraging her to manage it herself as long as she puts it in the perspective of accomplishing her goals. And I think I have buy-in there because she wants to do well. And then just trust that she can figure that out. And if she needs my help to do that, I'll be there to help her troubleshoot it. But I think
so hang on a second, Teresa, because you took a jump that I'm not quite with you on. And so
okay.
You went to the motivation being that she wants to do well in school. And so there's a jump from it. If I want to do well in school, I have to manage my phone. So the question is, how much buy-in do you have for that solution to helping her do better in school?
So I guess what you're saying maybe is that I'm making an assumption that her handling of her phone is potentially interfering with her accomplishing those goals.
Well, and
is
you,
that
you that's not an assumption. That's an observation, right? So you can see it as an adult. You're watching it, and it's a and so the problem is cause and effect, right? So you see your interpretation is that the cause is the phone, and the result could be if she managed her phone, she'd do better in school. She's got to be there in order to be interested in managing the phone. So there may be another reason that she wants to manage the phone, or there may be something else she wants to work on to try to do better in school. Does that distinction make sense?
Gosh, yeah, I'm having trouble with this nuance.
Less phone time is your agenda, Teresa.
Yeah, less phone time is my agenda. Okay.
Her agenda? No, okay. So if her agenda could be, I mean, so here's, let's spin it for a second. Less phone time is your agenda. It's possible that you could get her buy-in to not having you micromanage her phone use by having her identify and create a plan that you're going to be, that you'll partner with her on so that you don't have to be the one setting all the rules around the phone. Does that resonate?
Yeah.
So I don't want to be that mom that takes away your phone. So I'd like you to work with me or independent of me, even if you can, to come up with a plan for how you want to try to manage your phone. And again, we're going to use the language try because we're not looking for a solution. We're, you know, what are three things you could do that would help you better manage your use of the phone? And which one of those do you want to try first? Does that resonate?
Yeah, it does.
Cool.
I like that.
Rosie, what about you?
I am the same as Teresa. So, And I'm quite conflicted here in terms of, like, when do we continue to just do our unilateral parent thing? I mean, I'm not going to let my daughter have sex on the carpet. You know, that would be I don't negotiate that. You know, we just say no. So I'm really curious about this phone thing, about where do we just say, no, the phone is coming downstairs. These are the rules versus partnering. I'm having a hard time with that. So I want to take an aim on the phone too, and our challenge is, you know, because my daughter has been depressed and suicidal, all the rules went out the window, and now we're in a place where she has complete charge of her phone, and she really shouldn't have, right? So I'm wanting her, one of the things I notice is that because she has got her phone on her all the time, I think she's not doing other things. And I think she needs to put her phone down in order to give her the motivation to begin to do other things.
Well, so it sounds like, so remind me, Rose, how old is your daughter?
She's 17, but really, she's really, you know, maybe 12 in her thinking.
No, I get it. I'm looking for the chronological. I'll do the 3 to 5 challenge then. So thank you for the reminder on that. So at 17, it's not about what it's, so the reason I'm asking her chronological age, because chronological age indicates what independence they'd like to have.
Absolutely.
Right? And then the 3 to 5 challenge helps us identify what realistic expectations are for what they can take on independently versus the chronological age.
Yeah, absolutely. And just remember that this is a girl who's got full academic support. Like, I mean, she's only doing 2 classes, and she's maybe getting a minor in all those classes with help. So she's got a lot of learning challenges.
Yeah. So here's what's coming up for me, and see if it resonates. You want to take aim on partnering with her to come up with some boundaries around electronic use, since you haven't had any in the recent past. You know, so it's like, a long time ago we had all these rules, and now you're 17, and we don't think it's appropriate for you to have it free for all, because there's some things that aren't working, and I want you to kind of help identify what some realistic boundaries are. Because here's the deal. It's like in a couple of years, she's going to have to set her own phone boundaries.
Yeah.
And so you want her to be thinking about what's important about having boundaries and where using the phone is getting in the way for her, which is where this buy-in piece comes in.
Yeah. And I think the difficulty is like she would say the phone is not getting in her way. And she would say she's got it.
So what problem are you really trying to solve?
The problem I think I'm trying to solve is the fact that when she's on her phone, she's basically texting her boyfriend like 24 hours a day. So when she's doing that, she's not doing other things. So we noticed, like, for example, when she lost her phone and when she had her phone taken away for other reasons, then she begins to do other things. Like, she'll begin to maybe read. She might go and draw. She might go and play with the dog. But when she's got her phone on her all the time, I would say that she's got almost no motivation to do those things.
Yeah. Well, and so maybe I would challenge you to start there, which is, I noticed that when you focus on what you want and not what you don't want, right? So I noticed that when the phone was taken away that you were doing a lot of other things, you know, and see what her motivation and interest is. You know, it may be that she loves to just text her boyfriend all the time, and it may be that she forgot that she likes to do these other things. I mean, I think that part of it is, again, it's just sort of gauging her buy-in into the process. Does that resonate?
Yeah, and, you know, I hate to say it, but I think there would be very little buy-in. I mean, she has very little motivation to do anything else. I would say her motivation is she does love to just text her boyfriend. It's safe. It's no effort. Nobody's expecting anything of her.
Well, and so maybe, Rose, maybe what it is about holding her accountable for something else. And so I think about one of the things I've done with other clients is this sort of, I want my kid to have a social life outside of electronics. So you create that and you say, okay, so I want to do one thing fun with you each week.
Right.
And I want to get your buy-in, and I want to do it without electronics. I'm going to be off my phone. You're going to be off your phone, and we're just going to have something fun. You get to pick what it is. Or maybe we alternate, and I pick this week, you pick next week, whatever it is. But you focus on creating what you want, which is space for her to be away from her phone, rather than on regulating the phone. Does that resonate?
Right. Yes, got it. Yes. And I think that's the difficulty is that. So where would you say, Diane, though, where would you say, okay, I'm still the parent, I'm regulating the phone? Like, what would your boundaries? I get that you're always trying to get the buy-in, but we do have rules. unilateral rules.
Well, and that's true. You do. And the reality is that you could, in theory, you could do it at any point. But again, this sort of, you want to look at the four roles of parenting and where you want to be and the situation. So the example that I can't remember who it was earlier was talking about the fact that she's got a test tomorrow. You know, when there's a test, you might go back to level one parenting or level two parenting, right? I would always encourage with older kids that we go to level two parenting, which is you have a test tomorrow. What feels like a reasonable time to let go of your electronics? You need to have a boundary. Okay, right. So I'm gonna put my phone away at 8 p.m. or I'm gonna put my phone away at 9 p.m. And so you give them choices. You know, so it's more, you need to put the phone away at some point tonight. You get to choose what time.
Right. Okay.
So
you do, because the other challenge we have, which I'm sure other parents have, is like, she says, I'm putting my phone down and it's in my bedroom. And we're saying, no, it's got somewhere public where we can see it, because otherwise we have no idea whether she is or isn't on her phone.
Well, so again, this is a longer conversation.
Sorry. No, stop.
And I want to, because I've just looked at the time and we haven't even gotten to our conversation about asking for help today. But the reality is that this is trial and error. So it's this sort of, you kind of have to catch her, the first time she says, I can do it in my room. And then you catch her on her phone after the agreement and you say, hey, I just noticed that when you leave your phone in the room, you end up back on the phone. What's up? And, you know, it doesn't feel like you're adhering to the agreement we have. What do you want to try next? Well, I'm going to try putting it on the other side of my bed and not having it on my bed with me so that I'm not tempted when it buzzes, or I'm going to turn off the buzzer, or I'm going to turn whatever it is, right? So you want to give her what she wants, which is to have the phone in her room, but you want to have her accomplish what she has said she will, which is to not be on the phone after a certain time. Does that resonate?
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay,
cool. All right, so we're talking about asking for help, and this is a challenge for all of us and also for our kids. And who was talking? Anne was talking about self-advocacy and really specifically about helping her son figure out how to get into a space of wanting to ask for help more often when he's talking to his teachers. And it's a muscle, right? And there's a lot of reasons that it makes it hard to ask for help. A lot of times we as parents don't ask for help. We kind of take it on ourselves. Sometimes it's easier to just do it ourselves. But there's a lot of reasons that are underneath this. We just did a workshop in LA last week, and we were talking about kind of four core reasons that it's hard for people to ask for help. And the first one is that it's not okay to make mistakes. So it's the sort of, if I need help, I'm kind of admitting that I'm not good enough, or something's wrong, or something's broken, or I don't have all the answers. And for a lot of us, that's a hard thing to do. And for our kids, because they have had a lot of experience making mistakes a lot of times in their lives, it makes it even more difficult for them. So that's the first reason. The second reason is not enough buy-in, right? And so in the example of asking for help on to get accommodations in the classroom, it may be that the child's like, well, I shouldn't need them, or the child is thinking, I don't want to be different. I don't want to be that kid that needs help. I don't want to have to ask my teacher, right? So that kind of is a flavor of it's not okay to make mistakes, but it's that you don't really have the buy-in to ask for help. The third thing is that they're not ready yet. So they may still be working on it in their head and want to try to do it independently. And so that's a space to watch, is to kind of see, are they ready yet? Are they not ready yet to ask for help? And then denial, right? So the sort of, I don't think there's a problem. I don't want to admit there's a problem. That could always come into play. And then the last one we kind of talked about was this idea that sometimes stress makes it really hard to ask for help. So if we're triggered, we're worried, we're anxious, you know, kind of not in problem-solving mode, we kind of have to be in problem-solving mode to be willing to say, hey, I want somebody else to help me, or maybe this other person could help me figure it out. And if I'm all stressed out or triggered or anxious about a situation or worried about a situation, my ability to ask for help is going to be different. So part of when we notice our kids not asking for help, or when we know it's hard for ourselves, is to kind of really look at what's going on underneath it and figure out how to model it. First, as parents, we want to ask for help a lot, right? So it's this sort of, hey, I need your help to do X, Y, and Z. And rather than doing it yourself, even if it's easier, to kind of figure out how to engage someone else, either them or someone else in the family, to get help as a way to model it for them and encourage and reward it when they do ask for help. So what comes up for all of you around this idea of asking for help?
Well, this is Rosie, and I think probably my daughter's in a stress response a lot of the time. Like, we do the zones of regulation, and she's often in red, maybe because of emotional dysregulation. And also, you know, the poor kid, I mean, she's faced with herself every day and having not understanding what the teacher's saying, having to cheat just to get through, do you know what I mean? So that she can look good. So I think probably she doesn't want to ask for help because she feels so broken. It's like she's got to feel, you know, she's just keeping it together.
Yeah, yeah. Who else?
What is the question again? I'm taking notes here.
What are your thoughts around this idea of asking for help?
This is Teresa, and really the idea that comes up for me is more for me, because I avoid asking her for help because I, you know, in my overachieving mode, want her to have all this time to work and study, and I'm not doing her any favors because, in fact, when I give her time to work and study, you know, it just means she can socialize more and be with her friends. And so my husband, again, has been really great about saying, Teresa, you do need help. There's a lot going on to keep this family going. And so don't cut her slack. She needs that responsibility. She needs to know that that has to fit into her time. And so what resonates for me is accepting, saying what I need, and then holding her accountable to do it, and knowing that just like she'll probably manage her time better if she doesn't have all this extra time to be on the phone, because she doesn't obviously take as long as I would think she would need to study. So.
Well, and the thing that comes up for me as you're talking is, you know, how do you set realistic expectations for that, right? And so,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's easy to go from she's not doing anything to here are 17 chores I want you to help with around the house.
Right.
And you're
right.
Really talking
right.
About figuring out how to, you know, and that's the collaboration.
Right.
So I'm feeling
right.
Overwhelmed. What's one thing that you could take on around the house that
mm-hmm.
would be a help for me? Here's the things I'm
mm-hmm.
doing, you know, and give her some choices and start from level
mm-hmm.
two or level three. So what comes up as I
mm-hmm.
say that?
Kind of doing exactly what you say. But I mean, I believe that they all need to do a minimum amount of work just by being part of the family and being part of the team. And so and I think my mistake is that I let her go on even just basic core things. It's not like I'm even asking her to take on extra. I'm just, you know, if she's going to earn an allowance and be part of the family, and then she can, you know, I just need to set the expectations and not cut her slack, because what I found over and over is that when I do cut her slack, she doesn't go study. She, again, goes to the phone and socializes.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's this sort of, she may need help to accomplish the chores, right? So just saying,
mm-hmm.
okay, now you have to do this may not be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
They may need help
I
to become more
yeah.
independent
yeah.
in doing it, right?
Okay. Uh-huh. Yep.
Got it. Okay. Other
yeah,
thoughts?
Good point. Mm-hmm.
This is Anne, and I, you know, I've never had a problem
setting that expectation that my son helps around the house with cleaning and chores. And internally, that's never been a problem, asking for help, which my aha here is like, well, no wonder he asked me, you know, said to me, I'm having a problem with my teacher or this teacher. We don't have that issue of asking each other for help. It's asking other people for help that is my problem.
Well, that's interesting because so you ask each other for help. And so I guess in this situation, you know, can you partner with him to say, yes, I can help and I want you to do some of it. What part can you do versus what part can I do? So let's do it together instead of just me jumping in and taking it on. What is sharing the responsibility look like instead of, because if help historically meant I'm out, you're in, right, tag, versus help means, okay, let's do it together, what changes?
Well, what my language has changed a lot in the last couple months, thank you, instead of just saying, this is what you do to help me, I say, well, what part of this do you want to do? What part, you know, we divide and conquer.
Yeah.
It's asking other people outside. But recently my son recognized how I have really changed my language a lot. And he commented to one of his doctors that I watch a lot of these webinars to help me deal with his ADHD. And I acknowledged, yes, it helps me a lot to watch these webinars. And he noticed that a couple weeks ago and commented. So I think doing more of that, me showing him more how I have to ask other people to help me, and try to translate how that helps, you know, to help him learn that independence of asking his teachers when he needs that help.
So where is it that it's hard for you to ask for help?
I'm super mom. Mm. it's just the way I was raised with four brothers. I'm the only girl. I had to fight and claw for everything that I've ever gotten.
Okay, well, so make
that
way,
but in a family competitive way.
So I get why you're there. How much does it get in the way?
It doesn't get in my way necessarily, but I can see where I'm not giving him a good role model, a good model.
There you go. Now, that makes perfect sense, right? And that's the problem, right? So it's really easy to just take care of everything yourself, right? So I don't have to worry about anybody, especially if you've kind of cleared through all that resentment of it being your responsibility. You're like, no, I'm in charge of everything because it's easier and I'm superwoman and I can do it all. And you see the value in showing them this idea of asking for help and getting out of the pattern of them expecting you to do more and more instead of figuring out how to do and participate more. Does that resonate?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Other thoughts?
I've been on both sides of the asking for help. Because I recognize with my daughter that when I say, for instance, hey, you know, it's time to clean your room, but it's too much to let her do all of it. So, you know, I've said, okay, do you want me to help you? Or she'll go, oh, this is so much. I say, well, let me help you get started. And then I might help her get started, and then she's like, okay, I've got it now. I've let things go, like let her have her live in her stuff, you know, just not taking care of it. I said, look, if you can clean up, I can take care of, you know, cleaning the van, you know, cleaning the sinks and this and that. And I said, I don't expect you to be cleaning toilets. I said, but if you want to clean toilets, she's like, no, I'm not ready to do that yet. I said, okay, you know, just, if you just put your stuff away, I'll, you know, ask her for that. And I can do the dishes. We made that one of her chores, you know, quite a few years ago, that she put the dishes in the dishwasher after dinner or put them away, just to give her some feeling of responsibility. And so I'm fine with asking for help. And I want her to ask, you know, for help in return as well. Sometimes she will, sometimes she won't. It just really depends on her mood.
Yeah. Well, and that's the piece of it, is that sort of, how do you increasingly find a way to hold her accountable, and give her space to have her ups and downs?
Diane?
Yes.
Do these kids, is there something particular to ADHD that these kids have a difficulty asking for help over other kids?
I think that the main distinction is that they, for the most part, they have more opportunities to get it wrong,
right,
or to screw up, or to be behind, and so they get kind of in a self-defeating space, or why should I bother? I can't do it anyway. And you know, when it comes to things like accommodations, they don't want to be the different one, right? So it's you know. Do they want, you know, they don't want to be the kid who has to ask for extra time, or the kid who has to get permission to turn something in late, those sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder whether part of the executive functioning kicks in too, in terms of, like, my daughter has difficulty, like, initiating. And
yes.
So I wonder whether that also kicks in terms of being able to initiate, even identifying that. I think she'd have huge difficulty identifying that she needs help.
Yep, absolutely. That makes sense, too. Thank you, Rose.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, so let's move to our questions to wrap up the call today. We are on page 67. So what did I focus on, pay most attention to? What's my clarity or takeaway with an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So jot down some notes, and I'd love to hear from all of you at least one aha and one action item. And whenever you're ready to jump in, let me know.
This is Jennifer. I think the asking for help, my son is realizing now he needs to, especially in college, he needs to ask for the help. And I know it's hard for him, but he said, okay, I've got to go to Disability Services tomorrow and talk to them and get support or something for math. And it's like, well, yeah, you do. And he goes, well, can you call and find out? And I said, no. I said, you need to call and find out what you need for them. So I guess he did, because he told me later, he goes, Mom, I need a copy of my recent current IEP. And I said, okay. So I printed it off this morning, and I'll give it to him tonight. But he's fully aware, and I know it's gonna be really hard, because I guess one of his teachers already made a big point that, you know, I don't give extra time, I don't give, you know, different tests for other people. If you need accommodations, you need to ask for yourself through Disability Services.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's gonna be interesting to see him really follow through and hear what he has to say about the experience, because it's like, okay, I can't, I could follow up, back up and check and see, but I'm not going to.
Well, and Jennifer, you might think about whether or not you want to. I mean, I think that that's that you may not call disability services, but checking in with him and seeing how it's going could be a reasonable scaffolding and say, you know, did you go to disability services? What happened? How did it work? Do you need anything?
Right.
Do you need to do anything else? I mean, so asking great questions versus jumping in are two different things. Does that resonate?
Right. Yeah. And, yeah, I definitely wouldn't, you know, I would ask him how it went and everything. But as far as, like, I wouldn't call disability services and find out, you know, what does my 18-year-old need to, you know, to prove this, show this? You know, I'm leaving it up to him to figure out, and he's gonna have to figure it out.
Well, and here's what I would say, Jen, is that that's a decision that you are making, and there may be other scenarios and situations where a parent would say, I'm going to let them try first, and if they're having a hard time, I'm going to scaffold, right? And so there's a long way from him being completely in charge to you being completely in charge. And so it's this sort of helping them be accountable and making sure they're successful. Does that make sense?
Right. And I absolutely would if, you know, he was still having problems, say, okay, well, let's look at what, you know, disability services said or what they give you. You know, it seems like they give him a printout of things that he can get or needs to, you know, provide in order to get services. It's like, okay, let's look at this. What on here can we do, reasonably do?
Yeah. All right. Good. So anyone else? Aha,
yeah.
An action item.
Yeah, this is Rosie. My aha is I really like your breakdown of the different four reasons, you know, that we might have difficulty asking for help. That really helps me to see where my daughter's at. And my action item is I'm going to reward her. It's very hard for her to ask for help, and so I'm going to reward her for asking for help. And
I love that.
I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do that. I might even just ask her. I really want to acknowledge. I'm going to really acknowledge, you know, that she did it because she asked for help last night on something. And so today when she comes home, I'm going to really acknowledge that. And I don't know if you've got a suggestion. Like, would I maybe even just say I really want to reward you for that?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great idea. With our older kids, collaborate. Get them involved. Get their buy-in.
Yeah.
I really want to see you. I would love to see you ask for help more often. What would be a motivation for you to do that?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. So that's my action.
This is Teresa. I'm just going to piggyback on Rose because as everybody was speaking, my first aha was that it was me that needed to be asking for help. But as I listened to the conversation, I realized that my daughter does not often come forward and ask for help. And so I like the idea of affirming her when she does and supporting that and making sure that she understands that that is a healthy thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's good.
Awesome. Who did I miss?
This is Ann. My aha is just being able to break it down into manageable steps, which you've done, and just me showing my son how I ask for help, and there's nothing wrong with asking for help. And my action is to get curious with him because I don't know if he's in that denial phase that he needs help or if it's a stress, you know, a stress, or if he doesn't want to be that kid. I need to find out why, what's happening there that he is so hesitant to ask for help. So for me, that's my next step, is to figure out where he's at.
Awesome. Who else?
Did
I get everybody?
The four reasons are, no, not me. I think
okay.
The four reasons are really important, you know, and that for me just really helped out a lot. Just, you know, acknowledging her more, you know. I mean, I always, she'll say, Mom, I need your help. And I'm like, okay, what do you need? And, you know, and we'll talk about it. And if she needs something, you know, I'll go do it. Like, Mom, this morning I can't find my bike shorts. Can you come help me? And I had just been upstairs. And, you know, so recognizing also that she may not always know what she needs, and I might have to get curious with her and peel back the onion and help her figure it out. That may be a process.
Awesome. Love that. Good conversation today. Thank you, everybody, for being on the call. And we'll talk to you in September. I can't believe it's the end of August already.
Thanks, Diane.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you,
everybody.
Bye. I'll be in touch, Diane.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.